Welcome to Daredevil, Visionaries by artist Frank Miller, Volume 1. The cover art shows our masked crusader all in deep, dark red, with skin-tight pants and red boots, wearing red gauntlet gloves. His well-chiseled chest and abdomen are outlined by the costume, and a large D and D intertwined on his chest, of course, stands for Daredevil. His mask covers his eyes and part of his lower face, revealing triangles for eyes that are red. Also at the top of the mask are two horns, symbolizing his name, Daredevil. He is holding a policeman's nightstick. He is ready for battle. Frank Miller did the cover art. Steve Bucalato, cover color. Marie Javens with color graphics and Velasquez. Giruso Herrera, interior color seps. J.G. Rochelle of Comic Craft did the design, and Joe Quesada is editor-in-chief. Volume 1 is a collection of 9 different editions. Episode 160 was first published in September 1979. The title marquee features the word Daredevil in large block capital letters with a black perspective behind the letters. Additional block letters, but smaller, state, "In the Hands of Bullseye." The background graphic is that of the visage of Daredevil, giving the illusion that his costumed face is floating in midair. He is grimacing in anger, with his jaw clenched. In the foreground is a grinning Bullseye, striking a pose of triumph, as he holds a handheld hair blow dryer with its cord wrapped around the neck of the unconscious Black Widow, who he overcame in a fight in her apartment. He stands in the apartment, which is in ruins, around the two figures. He dwells in eternal night, but the blackness is filled with sounds and scents other men cannot perceive. Though attorney Matt Murdock is blind, his other senses function with superhuman sharpness. His radar sense guides him over every obstacle. He stalks the streets by night, a red-garbed foe of evil. Stanley presents Daredevil, the Man Without Fear. Epilogue. Black Widow, also known as Natasha Romanoff, a friend of Matt Murdock, is hurtling through the air with the aid of a cable she deftly throws to attach to buildings. She is in a blue costume with a yellow utility belt, her long, luxurious red hair trailing in the wind. The curse is on the Widow. She has felt it gathering for hours. Now a vague uneasiness as threatening as the heavy storm clouds that darken the skies above her. She glides through an upper-floor apartment window and comes to rest on an ornate rug. A small end table holding a lamp is in the background of the room. Black Widow is seated at a vanity. A framed photo of what appears to be a Russian military man is sitting on the vanity. He is wearing a high-collared uniform and sporting a mustache and a furry hat. It's at times like this that she needs to be alone in the quiet seclusion of her posh penthouse apartment in New York's fashionable Waldorf Towers, to let her hair down and try to forget that sooner or later the Black Widow brings death to everyone she touches. Yes, the curse is on the Widow, and it has come full circle. Suddenly she realizes she is not alone. The background shadows reveal a costumed figure holding a hairbrush. "Good evening, Natasha Romanoff. A lovely night for murder, isn't it?" Without turning around, she recognizes the voice, and she thinks, "Bullseye." With that, he hurls the hairbrush. With a lightning move, she dodges the missile, and crash! It shatters the vanity mirror. "I'll break you, Widow, just as easily as I shattered that mirror. Before I'm through with you, you will beg for death." Bullseye points to the mirror, reaches for the framed photo, and hurls the object. Again, Black Widow deftly avoids it, and it crashes into the wall behind her. Spack! She leaps onto a coffee table and makes a beeline for the other side of the room. "You will run, perhaps even try to fight at first." With lightning speed, Black Widow caroms off the far wall and uses her momentum to leap at her adversary. Bullseye hurdles a heavy vase holding a single rose, hitting her squarely on the chin. Ka-thack! The force of the blow sends her backward. On the floor, nose bleeding, Black Widow crawls toward her utility belt, which has fallen to the floor. Bullseye has grabbed a handheld hairdryer and deftly wraps the electric cord around her neck from behind, yanking her back. "It will do you no good, because in my hands, anything and everything is a deadly weapon. Even you, Widow, especially you." You will be the instrument of Daredevil's death. When he learns I have you, he will come for me, and that is when I will kill you both. What follows is a series of thrusts and parries by the two mortal enemies. She breaks his hold with a back kick to his knees. Crack! Simultaneously, she says, no! A backhand to the solar plexus. Thack! No! A leaping kick that misses and crashes into a decorative bust of a man. Spack! Bullseye avoids the kick, ducking to the floor. Snick! No! She screams. And he says, but there's no one alive as resourceful as Bullseye. Bullseye grabs a piece of the shattered sculpture and tosses it with a mighty throw, and it hits a chandelier above Black Widow on the ceiling. Crash! It hurtles down and hits Black Widow on her head, knocking her unconscious. Bullseye takes the letter opener from a nearby desk and skewers a nondescript piece of paper. Deftly throws the letter opener, which sails at the far wall, where it impales the paper. Thuck! As it is pinned to the wall, a close-up reveals that the paper is actually a photo of our stricken heroine. I have chosen the bait, and soon the trap will be sprung. In the background, Bullseye has picked up the unconscious woman, cradling her in his arms. Our story begins. The words, in the hands of Bullseye, are in bold red capital letters with a rectangular black background. The title is set against a graphic depicting Matt Murdock in a yellow rain slicker. There is a torrential downpour. Matt is clutching a fully open yellow umbrella resting on his left shoulder. In his right hand, he is gripping a folded blue umbrella, kneeling in front of a nearby tombstone with her back to Matt, is Heather Glenn, his friend and former girlfriend. Surrounded by tombstones, they are obviously in a cemetery. In the background is a group of people. Debbie Harris, a friend of Franklin Foggy Nelson, and Matt Murdock, is also holding an umbrella on her right shoulder. Standing next to her is Foggy himself, who is using a newspaper folded tent-like on his head in a vain attempt to stay dry. By the way, Foggy and Matt are old friends and law partners in the firm of Nelson and Murdock. Franklin got the nickname Foggy because he snored like a foghorn, which Matt discovered when they were roommates at Columbia Law School, where they both received law degrees. Also in the background with the others is Becky Blake, longtime secretary of the law firm and dear friend. She is wheelchair-bound because of a vicious assault when she was a college student. Heather says, Matt, I don't see why I had to come here today. Not today. And not with them, referring to the other friends. She is kneeling in front of a tombstone. It says, in loving memory of Maxwell Glenn, 1929 to 1975. Matt says, we're here because we care about you, Heather, and we think it's time you face the truth. Heather replies, the truth? Do you honestly think I don't know the truth? My father is dead. With that, Foggy sneezes. Achoo! And Matt continues, Heather, knowing the truth and learning to accept it are two different things. If we hadn't brought you here, and then Heather says, maybe I'd never have come. Is that such a bad thing, Matt? I've lost my father and everyone who... Not everyone, darling. Haven't I, Matt? When my father needed you most, you were always too busy playing Daredevil to help us. Please, Matt, promise me you won't ever let that happen again. Matt? Why don't you answer me? Matt bows his head in sorrow as the rain continues to pour in the desolate cemetery. Heather confronts him. Honestly, Matthew Murdock, you're the most stubborn man I've ever known. Just what is it you're trying to prove? I'm not trying to prove anything. I can't help what I am, and I can't change who I am. And then he says, I have certain responsibilities. With that, she slaps him right across the face. Smack! She walks off. She says frostily, Mr. Murdock, as far as I'm concerned, you can take your responsibilities and... As Murdock stands dejected in the deluge, staring at the ground, the others are reacting to what they've seen. Says Becky, Matt, he needs us, Foggy. To which Foggy responds while putting his hand on her shoulder, Easy, Becky, I'm not sure what just happened, but I do know my partner, and right now, I think he'd rather be alone. Time passes, and the next frame reveals Matt Murdock in street clothes, staring out a second-floor window of his darkened apartment, while the full moon casts a shadow of the horned Daredevil on the floor of the room. I hate being alone. While watching the sidewalk below, a friendly neighborhood crime fighter spies two lovers running by in the rain. I wish Heather and I could have been more like that couple. They don't seem to have a care in the world. He moves to the kitchen and pours himself a drink from a liquor bottle. I can't blame Heather for being bitter, but she is wrong about one thing. I don't live under the shadow of Daredevil. If anything, I live under the shadow of the promise I made my father years ago. With the drink glass in his hand, he walks back to the living room. I swore to him I'd make something of myself, and I think I've succeeded, both as Matt Murdock and as Daredevil. The room contains some of his effects. A bust of an Egyptian pharaoh, a grand piano, some books, and a couple of sofas. He falls into a heap in one of the sofas. But sometimes I just get so blamed lonely, I need somebody to talk to. Someone who can understand what I'm going through. Someone like Natasha. I haven't seen her in several days. Matt stands, removes his glasses, separates his walking cane, pock, snaps the upper curved part, tack, takes his red Daredevil costume from a closet, removes it from its hanger, and puts it on. He pulls on his red gloves, and as he places the red cowl on his head and face, I guess she's been tied up. The next frame reveals Daredevil running up a flight of stairs of his brownstone toward a large skylight at the top of those stairs. But I hope she's not too busy to spare a few minutes for an old friend. With practiced ease, the sightless man, without fear, sprints up a shadowed flight of stairs that leads to the rain-splattered rooftop of his Upper East Side brownstone and to an old, seemingly decrepit skylight. His foot stabs at a concealed switch, and sensing he is unobserved, the skylight opens, squeak, and the denizen of Hell's Kitchen leaps from under it while simultaneously releasing the cable inside his billy club to attach it to a nearby building, facilitating his leaps and flips to navigate to other buildings. As he performs an Olympic-style gymnastic flip on a streetlight, a man and woman on the sidewalk notice. Oh my! Finally, Daredevil speeds across Manhattan through the darkness and the rain, entering an upper window of Natasha Romanoff's apartment. Natasha, it's Matt. I sensed your window was open. I hope I'm not Natasha? She does not answer. His unique radar sense quickly confirms what he had already begun to suspect. Something is wrong. Something is very, very wrong. Her apartment is in shambles. The large chandelier is in pieces on the floor. Table lamps are strewn on the floor. Tables and chairs are upended. He picks up a heavy ceramic vase that earlier had been thrown by Bullseye at the Black Widow during their struggle. He stares at the vase, and then he hears the noise of a piece of paper flapping in the wind from the window. There is a hair blow dryer on the floor at Daredevil's feet. He hears the photo of Natasha pinned to the wall by the letter opener flapping in the breeze from the window. He removes it from the wall and senses the photo, then a close-up of Daredevil's face, resolute. His super-sensitive fingers tremble as they scan the surface of the wind-blown note. Natasha. Later, at the Daily Bugle newspaper, there's a busy newsroom. Various editors and reporters are talking. In the center of the frame, facing the reader, is a mustachioed editor with a receding hairline looking at a report being handed him by an unseen person. The editor has put his hand over the receiver of the telephone at his ear and is mumbling, "Oh no, not another Spider-Man expose." At the right of the long frame is our costumed hero in full Daredevil garb, speaking with Benjamin Urich, a journalist wearing eyeglasses, a white shirt with a loosened dress tie, and with his long sleeves rolled up. Daredevil sits on the edge of the desk. A poster hangs on the wall with the visage of a tough-as-nails newspaper editor who has a chiseled face and wears a slight grin. The caption reads, "Hard work never hurt anybody." Ulrich is listening to Daredevil while rifling through files in a cabinet next to his desk. He has a styrofoam coffee cup clenched in his teeth. Well, prior to his arraignment on 6 counts of attempted murder, he was taken to Bellevue for psychiatric observation. According to our sources, he was a model prisoner until 4 days ago. The next frame reveals a man in a white coat, a psychiatrist smoking a pipe leaning on the edge of his desk. "And you say your father beat you?" The doctor is addressing a man with blonde hair dressed in an olive-colored suit and lying on an overstuffed psychiatrist's couch. There is an office window on the opposite wall. The doctor says, "I see, and what happened then?" Meanwhile, in the background, the blonde man has left the couch and rips a microphone from the desktop recording device and then uses the cord to wrap around the doctor's neck from behind. I killed him. With great force, he flings the doctor's pipe and hits a security guard who has entered the office. Back! Rendering the guard unconscious. The reporter continues reading from the file. Before anyone could stop him, he took a nurse as hostage. Two nurses flee the attacking blonde man. Step away from that door, mister, now. One of the nurses, both in white uniforms, is apprehended by the blonde patient. He brandishes a revolver at another approaching security guard as he drags the woman to a nearby exit. Sure, sure, take it easy, buddy. He blasts his way to freedom. Blam! He fires the revolver at the exit door, destroying its lock. In the street, the man commandeers a police car and peels away. Scree! He fled in a stolen police cruiser that was later found abandoned in Queens. And by now, he's probably long gone. Suddenly, we are back at the newspaper, and with the reporter's final word gone, he turns to find Daredevil has vanished out a window. He studies the open window for several minutes before crossing the bustling newsroom to remove another folder from his files. The cardboard file has a photo of Daredevil paper-clipped to its edge, a folder that he has carefully cross-indexed under M for Murdoch. The scene switches to Daredevil swinging by his billy club cable as a crash of lightning strikes in the background. Then Daredevil is crouching on his right knee on the roof of a warehouse near the Brooklyn Bridge. The rain continues. Daredevil is changing into his street clothes. He is then walking on a sidewalk toward a nearby tavern. With a flat cap pulled down over his forehead, a shabby neon sign above the door reads, Bar, Josie's Grill. Two men are exiting the bar with a drunken friend in between them. All three stumble near Matt without the slightest idea they have walked past an American hero. It's all too clear now. Bullseye must have hired Eric Slaughter and his goons to kill me. When they failed, he went after Natasha. But she means nothing to him. He's just using her to get at me. Once she's served his purpose, he'll kill her without a second thought. This has become a game to him, a sick little game of revenge. He wants me to find him. And so help me, he won't be disappointed. I'll scour every underworld dive in this city until I do. As Matt moves to the back of the tavern's main room, he passes two muscular men in tank tops who are arm wrestling at a table while each has a gorgeous woman fondling their biceps. There's also a drunk asleep at a table, while the bartender behind the bar is raptly involved with a boxing match on the TV set above the bar. The TV blares.
They're squaring off in the center of the ring.
Matt stops at the table where an African-American man sits drinking beer from a mug.
Well, well, Lark Logan, got a minute to sing for your supper, Stooley?
Mister, I got all the time in the world, but not for you or your insults. The TV blares again.
And there's the bell.
Make time, Stooley. I need answers.
So who don't?
What can you tell me about a man called Bullseye?
Bullseye, huh? Let me think.
You do that, Stooley. Think real hard. I'm sure something will come to you.
The TV blares again.
What a struggle!
As Matt questions the man, another African-American seated on a bar stool in the background notices Matt and Logan speaking to each other. Matt produces some $20 bills. The man at the bar says, Hey, Mississippi. And Mississippi, who is talking to Matt, says, Yeah, I'm beginning to see what you mean. From the TV.
Uh-oh, the champ's in real trouble now.
Matt says, I heard he's doing business with a bum named Eric Slaughter.
Shh, not so loud, man. You're trying to get us both killed. You go messing in that dude's affairs. He'll come down on us like a ton of bricks.
And Matt thinks, that's exactly what I'm hoping for. I've got to force his hand, drive him out in the open. He's my only lead to Bullseye. And judging by the number of heartbeats that sped up at the mention of his name, I think I just struck pay dirt. By this time, the man at the bar, known as Turk, has produced an automatic handgun.
Put the drink down, mister, nice and slow.
Matt says, Hello, Turk. How's the jaw? From out of a back room, a man in a white suit approaches Murdoch. He is accompanied by a very large bodyguard with a heavy chain at the ready to wrap around Murdoch's neck. A man is shown with a long knife approaching Murdoch. The man in front of Murdoch says,
I'm only going to ask you once. What do you want with Mr. Slaughter?
Matt says, Nothing. I want Bullseye. Suddenly, a woman in a low-cut black dress brandishes a sawed-off shotgun at Turk.
And I don't want no trouble with the cops, Turk. Put that rod away now.
And Turk says, Aw, Josie.
With that, the TV blares.
Oh, mama, what a punch.
He hits one of the men with a very heavy glass beer mug. Crack! In the next instant, Matt one by one disables each man in succession with super speed. By the time each of them can throw a punch, Matt has eluded each of them as they are nearly punching each other in the brawl.
Watch out! Hey, where'd he go? I don't know. I never saw nobody move that fast. Why, you little...
Meanwhile, Josie watches in horror and surprise as several men are fighting each other in a good old-fashioned bar brawl.
The great Baba's using every dirty trick there is. It's total mayhem in the ring.
In the midst of the fight, the man with the knife says, I got a nasty feeling about this. And the black man says, just shut up, Decker, and find that guy before the light... I knew it. I just knew it. We have seen in the background that Daredevil has thrown his billy club. It bounces off a couple of lights. Thack! Speck! And the room is in total darkness. The billy club caroms off one of the lights and hits the man with the stocking cap, knocks him senseless. Meanwhile, there's a man with a table leg, and he says, oh, no, look, it's... And there's Daredevil. His billy club caroms off a bar stool, thup, and it flies up into his hand. Daredevil says, it's time you learn the facts of life. Fact, there's a contract out for my death. Fact, I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. How much did Bullseye offer you to kill me? And the man with the chair says, plenty, devil. And he connects on the back of Daredevil's head. Crack. More than you're worth, that's for sure. The man in the brown jacket holds Daredevil's arms behind him. The man says, now's our chance. Stick him. Two men approach with knives. He maneuvers out of their way and throws the man over his shoulders. No, you don't have a chance. You never did. And he throws both men through the front of Josie's window, shattering the glass. A drunk outside on the sidewalk is putting an empty liquor bottle in a trash can, and he says, oh, dear. The next frame of the issue is titled Prologue in block yellow letters. Daredevil is gripping the collar of a badly beaten Turk while all around the floor is strewn the bodies of unconscious men. I want you to find Bullseye, Turk, and when you do, tell him Daredevil is coming. The final frame of the issue is a close-up of Daredevil's face, his eyes glaring red. Next, for the life of the widow, Daredevil stalks an island of death. You've been listening to Daredevil number 160. This is Greg Conroy.